Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech, and I'm running solo this afternoon. Perry, who happens to be part of a very large family, is having a very large wedding for one of the nephews in the family. So they are having big celebration, and he didn't think he could get a pass for the radio show. So I'm here by myself and radio staff. So if you want to talk to me today, you have questions about your portfolio, you have a question about something that you own in your portfolio, wondering whether you should retain it or sell it, or maybe your friendly local financial advisor has suggested that you make a change in your portfolio and you're not quite sure whether that recommendation was in your best interest or his. Part of that is resolved if he is a fiduciary. Then that answer is pretty easy. But most financial advisors are not fiduciaries. They are, in fact, salespeople wearing hats that make them look a little bit like a fiduciary. But the real question is, how do they get paid? And if you don't have a contract and you aren't paying them, then they're not fiduciaries, they're salespeople. Then you just need to keep that in mind. But if you want to talk today about the market, 800-465-8770 is the magic number, and you will be put in the queue, and I will be glad to talk with you. Just pick up the phone, punch in 800-465-8770. Well, this morning we did our monthly stock market update. Perry and I do on the first Saturday of every month, unless it's a three-day weekend, which is going to be next month. We have Labor Day coming up. So instead of the first Saturday, it'd be the second Saturday. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. And if you did not remember that we were having one this morning, you can now listen to it. I just checked out the link. It is really easy. Go to iriradio.com and pretend you're signing up for this morning's webinar, and the link will take you right there. It starts right up. It did for me. It looked just great. Well, if we're back in the Vietnam era, there was a popular song, which was kind of a sad song. It was Delta Dawn, an injured military back dealing with the disabilities and stuff, and those kinds of things put stress on marriage. But in today's world, Delta has a whole new meaning. The Delta Dawn is an economic problem, not a relationship problem. The Delta variant of COVID-19 is, according to the news and data, is raging around the world, and that is true. And as a result of it, consumers are having second thoughts about the economic recovery. It is already hindering some buying behavior and hitting consumer confidence quite hard, according to a report by Morning Consult. That report shows that consumer confidence has fallen sharply since the beginning of July, dropping nearly 5%, and it's at its lowest point since March 9 of 21. It's the most significant decline since November of 2020, when the third wave of infections was tearing through the country. But it was also that same time that we were getting some vaccines. We didn't know how they were going to work. And now we do know that in large part they do work, and they are minimizing or at least reducing the impact of even the Delta variant. But as an example of what damage is being done on the confidence levels, restaurants are providing data that shows a sharp consumer confidence decline, and the number of people going out to eat at cafes or restaurants has dropped from early in July to the latter part of the month. One of the ways that that is tracked is on open table restaurants. And compared to even 2 years ago in 2019, open table reservations are down nearly 8%. So while we're not as bad as last year by any means, things are still not back to normal. And this economic fear is a serious issue. If consumers increasingly opt to stay away from activities that they deem too risky, sales at businesses such as restaurants, hotels, gyms, even airlines are going to have some setback. And that's a potential undermining of the recovery in the service sector and therefore the U.S. economy as a whole. That's not good news. We are doing better. Things are looking up. The stock market, basically, as an indicator, tells us that. But we still have a long way to go. People are not over the fear of COVID and its multiple variants that are in the system globally. But one of the things that was interesting is that this last year, nobody ever caught the seasonal flu, because the data got picked up as COVID-related. And we are going to have to learn to live with this as we have all other flus that come and go and change their nature. And so every year you get a new flu shot, and they say, well, we think this year we have a better than 50-50 chance of actually having the flu shot work. That's the new world. That is the world we are going to live in. And we don't want to do that living in fear the rest of our lives. We have to figure out how to adapt to this new reality. So the real question is, where are we going? How is this economy actually going to move into our new world? There's a quote from Ian Wilson, who's a former GE executive, that I like. And it really has to do with how, not only how you handle life, but it has to do with how you handle your investment portfolio. So quoting Mr. Wilson, no amount of sophistication is going to ally the fact that all your knowledge is about the past and all your decisions are about the future. And that's certainly true when it comes to the market. Analysts spend most of their time focused on the past, conveying information or knowledge. Because we can look at it. We can research it. We can look at it. It's easy to look up stuff today with Google and all the search engines that are available. You no longer need an encyclopedia. That's a business that went out of business, an industry that went out of business with the advent of the search engine. But that's just old stuff. Then what do you do going forward? Because nobody knows the future. It remains unknown, even to those who are believed to be the smartest among us. Analysis about the past. It tells us where we are, how we got here, what led up to this point. But it has to be presented in context. Less time is spent on what new information means for the future. And so when it comes to investing, the majority of financial advisors in the industry today are using long-term, out-of-date data to build portfolios. And they do that with a common starting point. 85 to 90% of people's portfolios, whether built with a financial advisor in the local community or online, and they're answering a questionnaire. It's called a risk analysis questionnaire. How old are you? How much money do you have? How much you want to invest? Do you have emergency reserves? How much debt do you have? Do you need to take money out to support yourself? How much money are you willing to lose before you fire me? Well, how much money you're willing to lose and still stay the course is the question. Before you fire me is implied. But all of that just simply means you answer the questions. Each answer has a numeric value assigned to it, and they dump it into the company's pre-approved formula, and voila, you end up with a 60-40 stock bond portfolio almost all the time. maybe it's 55-45, but it's in that range. 80% of investors end up in a 60-40 portfolio. It's because you don't want to lose money, and the system makes it look like you have protection on the downside, which in fact you do not. The way you don't lose money in the stock market under standard processes is you don't put money in the stock market. You put money in the bonds because bonds are less volatile. They also have less return, but we don't talk about that. The way you avoid losing money in your portfolio is having a process that says, when this goes south, I get rid of it. Majority of investors do not have an investment policy that says, sell this turkey. They don't even have one that says, sell this winner, both of which are important to have a successful investment strategy. If you have questions about your investment strategy, we do have an open phone line, 800-465-8770. We also have access to this morning's market update webinar at irradio.com. That's irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the website is a webinar registration page. Just click on that. A couple of clicks, your email and your name. You have to click on the button that says we only do business in areas in the states in which we're licensed. And then it says register. And click right there. You're going to have the update on what we view as current market conditions and risk. But right now, the risk is I am out of time on this segment. So we are going to go to break. I'll be back in just a few short minutes, so stay with me. And in the meantime, you can dial 800-465-8770 to get on the phone queue.
The miniature walked in the joint. I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender.
Well, I don't know how good-looking Congress is, but the Senate has decided to jump on board with the administration. Republicans and Democrats apparently have decided that spending more money by borrowing it from global suckers who trust the U.S. dollar, trust Congress and the Fed to keep the dollar from collapsing, well, it looks like The quasi-infrastructure bill is going to pass. Quasi, because there's an awful lot of stuff that you and I might think is infrastructure, like roads and bridges. I mean, one of the deals with promoting this whole thing in the beginning was, look at the condition of our bridges across the country. We should be embarrassed as a nation to have bridges in such disrepair. But now that we're going to have a new bill, we don't need to spend money on it because we got your consent. At least we got your emotional consent. So now we're going to do lots of other things that we think are much more important than fixing your roads and bridges. You guys go deal with that yourself. If the bridge has to be shut down, an interstate bridge over a major waterway, now let the state deal with that. We know it's federal, but we don't want to deal with it. And that's kind of what's going on in Congress. One of the things that is a big promo, of course, in the new infrastructure bill is the money being spent on electric car chargers. And even though Elon Musk should be excited about that, since he kind of started this whole thing, they didn't invite him to the announcement about what they're doing. But when we look at e-vehicles, 60% of the cost of a car and battery-driven or hybrid is in hard materials that require somebody somewhere in the world mine the stuff, destroy the Earth's surface to get it out. Well, you know what? All the equipment that does that takes carbon-based fuels. An e-car plan needs in order to meet the goal to have 50% of cars produced in the United States to be e-vehicles by the end of the decade is going to require a 6,000% increase in mining activity globally in order to get there. And right now, the number of new mine applications pending in the global economy is zero. Nobody is trying to open up a new mine for anything. And what do you need? Not only do you need lithium, you need cobalt, you need all sorts of rare materials, and you need copper up the zigazoo. I mean, the amount of copper that an e-vehicle requires over a gasoline-powered vehicle is, well, it's not astronomical, but it is substantially more. It's like 4 to 6 times more copper is required. Now, the copper industry is something that's in a bit of a bind right now because there are no recently opened copper mines. The ones that are operating are going back through what they considered to be trash copper from prior mining activity, that the cost of processing was so high and the global marketplace was so low, so cheap, it didn't make economic sense to process it. But now prices are rising. So instead of getting high-grade copper, whatever copper you're getting is a secondary grade of copper because prices are high enough to go back and process the trash. And that's what's being done. Now, to get a new copper mine up and running, one, you got to get a permit. Permit has to get approved. Once you get it approved, and maybe before then, there are some people who do not think mining is good for the economy or the global environment. So they're going to sue you, and you're going to spend years in court. And assuming you win, then you have to get operational. Your real first economic production of copper is 16 years away. And yet in 10 years, less than 10 years, 8.5 years, the administration believes that half of the cars in the country will be e-vehicles. It would make more sense if we said, this is the goal we would like to achieve, and in order to do that and have them be economical, we need to start building the mines to produce the material instead of buying it from China. The e-vehicle objective is really a China-first policy because that's where we're buying the bulk of those raw materials. That's a policy that is not well thought out. It's also a policy that, from an investment standpoint, over the longer haul, puts a lot of positive upward price pressure on commodities, which happens to be inflationary. But as an investor, I mean, there's a place to make money. And like anything else in the investment community or investment arena, there's always something that's making money. The question is now the time to own it? And there are times to own things and there are times to sell things. And you can find out how we make that decision and why that's critical to your retirement success if you just watch the replay of today's market update webinar. Go to IRIradio.com, IRIRadio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the website says webinar registration. Couple of clicks, your email and name, and check the box. It says, you know, we only do business in states where we're authorized to do that. And you will, and then you click register, and bingo, right there. It's going to be the beginning of the webinar. Well, how does the economy actually grow? Well, the economy grows because people have money to spend. And one of the ways that we're going to see economic growth occur over the next couple of decades is all those people who have home mortgages who have recently or are in the process of refinancing them. Why is that a big deal? Well, it wasn't that long ago that mortgage rates on a 30-year mortgage were 5%. They no longer are. And if you reduce your mortgage from a 5% rate to today, if you've got good credit and good equity, you can get below a 3% rate. That saves you hundreds of dollars a month, which is discretionary income that can be used to build your financial position or help make it easier to deal with discretionary spending because you'll have money left over if you're not using it on the mortgage. So there's a big benefit in these lower rates. And these lower rates probably are not going to rise substantially, but why not take advantage of them while they are here? Now, what happens with stimulating the economy is not for the government to borrow money, because the only way the government spends it is first they have to borrow it from somebody else. So they take it out of somebody's bank account to spend it. Now, granted, a lot of that money's coming out of foreigners' bank accounts, but that means that money's not stimulating the economy because they're giving it to the government. And government doesn't spend money efficiently. Most of us agree on that, unless, of course, you're a politician and think you have the answer to spending it right. But where spending does come, or borrowing does come and make sense, is at the household and business level. If you're a householder and you borrow money, you happen to be talking to a lender who expects you to pay it back. And they're not going to lend it to you unless they're pretty confident that you will. The government, on the other hand, doesn't worry about it. They just think if we can't pay it back now, we'll just tax somebody else later to get the money. We'll deal with it down the road. It's just kicking the can one more time. So one thing that did not happen last year that was supposed to happen when the government passed out a lot of extra payroll support to households, the plan was we give you money. You don't have a job. You'll go spend it. You'll maintain your spending patterns just like you did beforehand. But now you have more time. Of course, we're not letting you go anywhere. But people didn't do that. They're looking at this money. They're staying home and they're saying, you know, maybe we can get caught up in some stuff. The American public, with their household budgets, surprised and disappointed Congress by behaving fiscally responsible. Something what we wish Congress would do. They paid down debt. They paid down auto loans. They paid down student loans. They paid down credit cards. They saved money. They improved their financial situation. And now what we have also learned from recent surveys is that much like their grandparents in the Depression, millennials have changed their attitude about, just spend it. It's another day, another dollar. It's easy come, easy go. And they're realizing maybe it goes easier than it comes. And they're changing their behavior. Surveys show that investors are much more inclined to be much more cautious about how rapidly they spend the money and how much bigger their emergency reserves should be, because they don't necessarily know if they're going to be able to keep their job, if they have one, where they'll find the next one. The psychology has changed, and that was a disappointment that Congress did not want and did not expect. But it is the reality of where we are today. We do have an open phone line if you want to talk about your portfolio or you have a question about a given stock. We can look that up, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770, for an informational and educational look at today's economy and market. I suggest you look at today's webinar. Go to iriradio.com, iriradio.com. Lower left corner of the website says webinar registration. It says for August 7th, that registration link takes you directly to the replay. You will learn something. The surveys, I've already looked at the surveys, they said so. And everyone who responded to the survey and gave it a rating, rated it 8 to 10. You will not be disappointed. You will learn something. We do have inflation coming up ahead of us, and that has some negative impacts on the way most people structure their portfolios. But I'm up against my second break here. So you want to give us a call? 800-465-8770. I'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay with me. There's more to come.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your...
Yeah, anybody who plays cards understands Kenny Rogers song. You got to know when to fold them, and that's true in the investing world also. But most people understand the adage, buy low, sell high. But along with that, in a good investment plan also has a process to sell high to preserve capital so that after the storm has walked through and done damage to the marketplace, you have cash to pick up bargains. But that's not part of most investors' plan. They believe, or have been told, and therefore have bought into the propaganda or brainwashing, if you will, of the financial services industry, that you can control risk by adjusting the bond portion of your portfolio. That doesn't work. In the last two major bear markets, let's call last year's the third one. We got the tech bubble, the great financial collapse, and we have last year with the COVID collapse. We had a couple smaller ones back in 18 and 15, which did not turn into bear markets, but had some substantial, if you call a 20% drop in your portfolio to be substantial, those did take a few months, and then they survived, but they didn't turn into official bear markets. If you just buy and hold and you sleep through losing 20, 30, 40, 50% of your account over a period of time, then what we have to say doesn't make any sense. You just buy and hold and you're in there for the long haul. But bonds have become disconnected from the academic theory. When the market goes down over the last several bear markets, bonds have lost value also. And generally, gold has lost value in those period of times, particularly in the 08 meltdown. The S&P's down 34% then. There wasn't an asset class that was going up. Diversification did not offset the market drops. And here we are today with bonds having been a winner for the last nearly four decades because interest rates have been falling. Well, lower interest rates, that means I have less income. Yes, but that makes you a winner. You're a winner because your bonds went up in value. So now as you get older and you're told, we're going to manage risk by putting more money into bonds because they're the safe asset. Well, they're safe because over the last 40 years, the average return, some variance on when you start your calculation and what type of bond you're using, is somewhere between 5 and 7%. Let's call it 6. So if interest rates drop 50%, your bonds go up in value. It's just math when it comes to the bond market. Now, your income's lower, but if you sell your bonds, you have more money. You can then take more money and invest at a lower rate to try preserving your income. And that's where we are now. We have the 10-year Treasury bond, which is on its way to 1%. At least that's what it looks like. It has dropped to as low as 1.1 in recent weeks. I think we closed yesterday at 1.3 something. But that is, that's pretty low. So if you're putting bonds in your portfolio as a risk management tool, you are assuming that interest rates probably the rest of your life are going to fall further another 90%. And if they don't, your assumption is backwards. You are upside down. Larry Summers and Mohammed El Arian, who is a big money manager, was quoted recently in a Bloomberg article, inflation is not going to be transitory, said El Arian. He's at Allianz Investors. He was on TV, Bloomberg's TV show. Quote, I have a whole list of companies that have announced price increases. They have told us they expect further price increases, and they expect them to stick. I think the key line here is they expect further. Now, I write a daily letter for financial advisors that subscribe to it. And one of the things I've pointed out is that many of these companies with products that we use, I think of Johnson & Johnson and Procter & Gamble just for starts, a lot of household staples products. They've raised them more than once this year. Sales are not declining, and they expect more price increases to follow. Their input costs are going up. Raw materials are going up. Labor costs is going up. Wherever you look as a business operator, your overhead is going up. Maybe some rents dropped a little bit, but for most part on their manufacturing, you know, they weren't short-term, they're long-term. You get inflation adjustments. Well, the Fed says inflation's transitory, but they don't mean these price increases are transitory. What the Fed means by transitory inflation is that while we are experiencing 5% inflation right now, next year it may not be 5, it might be 4. And then next year after that, it might be 3. We might get back to a 2% inflation. The rate of acceleration is transitory, but the price increases, you are going to live with them. Wages have to go up. Well, they have to go up because businesses can't get people to go to work. They give them more money, and they will sooner or later decide, hey, that's enough. I'll quit watching TV, go to work, have more money, and do more things. So those increases are going to be passed on to consumers. They don't go away. When was the last time you heard of any industry or even a company, a major company, telling its employees, well, we know we've been paying you, let's say, $25 an hour for these past couple of years, but you know, that just doesn't make any sense anymore. So everybody's going to get a 10% across the board pay cut. Well, it did happen back in 08 and 09. I mean, companies were trying to preserve their employee base. And so people, because it was nationwide, employees said, okay, but when it was over, the companies had to give it back. They had to put those pay raises back in place to avoid massive rebellion. And that's not good. I lost track of my time. Look at my clock here. I've got a few more minutes before my next break. Anyway, this inflation, transitory inflation, needs to be changed in the way you think about it, because these price increases you see are not what the Fed is talking about are going to go away. They are here to stay. The one thing that may not stay is the price of used cars. We get semiconductors back online in quantity in about a year and a half or 2 years, and automobile prices may begin to soften, and the buyers for cars have slowed down. They're saying, I'm not too sure about this. You want suggested retail plus how much extra? I think I'll repair my car. That is showing some signs of investor rebellion. But the other rebellion is the cost of things are getting so expensive. My income's not going up. I cannot afford to go out to eat. I cannot afford to go to the movie theater. I will pay Disney for live streaming or Netflix. I'll do that because I can stay home and watch a brand new movie from Disney for $30. I don't have to spend $150 to take my family to AMC and buy the popcorn and do all that stuff to get in the door and watch it there on a bigger screen. In fact, if I refinance my house, I have enough money that I can buy a bigger flat screen for home. Those seem like more rational decisions, but they aren't necessarily ones that are going to be driving the economy in the way that we have seen it happen in the past. This is a new world. The market is dynamic, and most people's portfolios are not dynamic. They are very, very static. You set up the portfolio when you fill out your original risk questionnaire, and you're identified as a conservative investor. Even at a market bottom, when things are really cheap, you're a conservative investor, and therefore you would never allow you to buy cheap stuff in your portfolio. We're going to hang on to the stuff that just tanked until it recovers. And after all, most of your money is in bonds anyway, so they didn't tank as much. We think that makes absolutely no sense. When the market is high and crashing, you should have an exit strategy that builds cash in your portfolio. Systematically, data-driven decision, not because you believe something. And I talk to people regularly who believe that the market cannot go higher from where it is today. And they've been saying so for years. Now, this goes back before the COVID disaster last year. But we had new clients come to us who had been in the market, they'd been out of the market in cash since 2009. They'd spent the better part of a decade of rising stocks, full of fear, not knowing what to do because they lack process. And the pie chart portfolio did not protect them in that 08, 09 debacle. So they didn't trust it going forward, and reasonably so. You want to understand how that works, why it, what's really different. You should register for the replay of today's webinar. Go to irradio.com. That's irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the website, it says webinar registration for today, August 7th. Well, the webinar is over, but the replay's live and ready to go. A couple of clicks, your email and name, and you'll be able to watch it. You will learn what we're talking about when we say you need to have an exit strategy. There's no single signal that says the market's going to crash. But what you can do is look at every position in your portfolio. Everything you own has a pattern to it. And when that pattern gets weaker and weaker and weaker, it's like you, when you get, you know, there's a cold coming on and your fever starts and you've got an upset stomach and your energy wanes. And pretty soon you say, I really need to go back to bed. Gut this out. Your stocks tell the same story. If somebody's watching them with a process, they get a little bit of a fever and it progresses and they get weaker and weaker and weaker. And the average investor says, yeah, it's okay. They'll live. Well, yeah, but your portfolio can go through substantial damage. I got more to cover here. This I'm up against my last break. I'll be back momentarily. We do have an open phone line at 800-465-8770 if you want to call and talk to me in this last 14 minutes or so.
Detour, there's a muddy road ahead. Detour, paid no mind to what it said. Detour.
Yeah, it's easy to get sidetracked when you're in the market because there's so much stuff to look at. Let's see, I have Ed on the line from Linwood. Ed, you are on the line, on the radio.
Thank you. All the radio's been off. I'm an experienced phone caller. My degree in engineering was in 1953, so it tells you I'm a little older than you. And one of the things I've looked at over the years is never pay attention to what the politicians say, pay attention to what you do. The expression, your actions speak so loudly I cannot hear your words, is what I believe in. And my comment is, we're talking about getting more and more electric automobiles. When we had horses, we paid for our whole grain and our oats. And when we had automobiles, we paid for our gasoline. But in electric automobiles, we're going to have to figure out how to pay for the gas, the electricity. But we're not going to have any electricity served. We already have brownouts in all kinds of places. So we have a minor problem of actually using. However, at the risk of asking the question, do you know of a large source of that kind of material to create those batteries and this, and all the bitty pieces that go into the phone and the computer when there is no lithium concentrate? I'm careful about the word lithium, that I say it correctly. China has it. And when they say you don't get any more, what's going to happen to all of that activity? What's
okay, Ed, I want to thank Ed. You obviously have thought this through really well, and I want to thank you for your call. Let me try and address that because you raise a number of issues. and that is that we don't have an adequate supply of lithium. We don't have an adequate supply of cobalt. We don't have an adequate supply of copper to deal with what the administration wants to do. All of these items are going to be under severe shortage, and they all require massive amounts of mining, which the people who love e-vehicles do not want us to do. So they are at an ideological, self-imposed conflict. They want this, and they don't want to allow what will make their dream come true. You're absolutely right. Now, lithium is something that we actually own in our portfolios, have off and on, have made some good money with it. But even that is something which comes and goes. There are times to own it, just like gold. Gold has times that you should be an investor in it. Copper has times to be an investor in it. Everything has a cycle to it, whether it's commodity, stock, bond, domestic, international, value, growth. The market is dynamic, and it is more volatile than it has been in many, many decades. We have more uncertainty here and a process to figure out, to evaluate where's leadership in the market, and do you own leadership or do you own laggards? And most people have a portfolio that has half of it in laggards, things that are nothing more than an anchor. And Ed's absolutely correct. California is mandating an increasing number of e-vehicle sales when they can't produce enough electricity to keep people with air conditioning or refrigerators and freezers running during the summer. Everybody's on brownouts. And they're not the only state that has that problem. The answer was supposed to be solar and wind power. I read an article today between our two shows that basically the people who have been after wind power have found out that if the wind farms are too dense, they actually slow down the wind, and the further back you are from the source of the wind, the slower the windmills turn, which means there's less and less power coming out of them, which means they're less and less economical. The whole system is a dream. It's a pipe dream. There's just simply not enough technology. On the solar side, you need to have your solar panels. And where do you get all the semis and the glass for those? They come out of China. Now, Taiwan and Japan are big producers of semiconductors, but they've both had trouble maintaining production levels through the COVID shutdown, and we're not up to speed. Those are another 2 years out, maybe three, before we catch up with demand and see any softening in the supply chain. The supply chain is disrupted. These things need to be addressed. They should be addressed in the current environment in your portfolio. That's a disciplined investment process rather than saying, let's diversify across all sorts of segments around the world, around asset classes, around investment types, growth, value, and so on. Well, Warren Buffett has an interesting comment on that. And he says, diversification is for people who don't know what they're doing. And in that includes most financial advisors whose recommendation is let's diversify your portfolio instead of let's look at the market and see what portion of the market makes sense to own in this economy, because it will change. And then somebody has to monitor it, and somebody has to have a system that says, I know this has worked well, it's profitable, but we should not continue to own it. The wind is changing direction, and it's going to change this. Most people say, nah, I don't know. I don't know about that. You know, it's been good to me. I'll just hang on to it. And sometimes that works. We take Amazon stock. The people who have held on to it have made a lot of money. But to get there, they had to suffer drawdowns greater than 30%, hold their nose, take some Tums, and hang on and wait for it to recover and go back up. Well, that is a process. That's buy and hold. But that event should not be translated over into everything else in the stock market. Amazon's an exception. Apple's an exception. But even with those, a disciplined process of avoiding those big drawdowns and reinvesting in it is a much more profitable process, and it doesn't require chewing your way through a package of Tums every time those things come. One of the industries that is supposedly on the road to recovery is the cruise line business. Oh, yes, the cruise line business. People are showing back up because they want to take cruises. Well, that's interesting. Carnival's been in the news a lot. On my screen here, I'm going to pull this over so I can take a closer look at it. So I talked about this. I wrapped this up in this morning's webinar, which you can see by going to iriradio.com. And clicking on the webinar registration link, it'll take you right to the replay. So I cover this kind of wrapping up. So Carnival is recovering from the pandemic sell-off. So from the bottom of that market to today, or to Friday's close, it's up 189%. Woo-wee, isn't that great? However, if we go back to last year, pre-pandemic crash, it has, even after Friday's rally, it is still down 56%. This is kind of an interesting one because if we go back far enough, what we actually see is that this was a stock that was recommended by Morningstar last February, I believe, maybe the tail end of January, because the market had gone up and then dropped, and as a value investor, they recognize the opportunity here. And since that period of time, even with Friday's rally, that recommendation is still down 48%. That's a buy and hold policy. Someday in our future, assuming Carnival's finances don't collapse, the cruise line business will recover. May not be Carnival. I have no idea. But why would you continue to hang on to this through a 48% collapse? Because you like to cruise? Or you know people who do? Well, that's not good investment policy. Good investment policy is this is a position that is getting ill. And we need to put it in the hospital for a while. And when it gets over its fever and it quits throwing up or making me throw up, we'll put it back in the portfolio when times are better. That's an investment process driven by data, not by opinion, not by your emotional reaction because you love the company and the way it drops product off on your doorstep, which it does. But what's the decision-making process that's data-driven, not emotional-driven response to something that may be absolutely irrelevant? That is what we do at Investor Resources. Data-driven, protect your capital. Warren Buffett has another saying. Now, we don't follow Warren Buffett's investment policy, but he's a smart investor, and he said a lot of smart things. He has some rules for successful investing, which we follow. Rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, remember rule one, which means if you buy something under the assumption that it was headed upward and it gets sick right after you buy it, put it in the hospital. Get out of it. Do not get tied to the emotion of, I made a good decision. I did a lot of research. I waited to be until I was absolutely certain this was going to work, and then I bought it, and now it's tanking. What do I do? Well, I made a good decision. I took a lot of time. That doesn't matter. Conditions have changed. It's time to call for a divorce. Put that thing in the hospital. Find something that is going the right way. You'll be better off. You'll preserve your retirement account. You'll preserve your college funding account. You'll preserve whatever legacy money you want to set aside. The thing that big institutional managers are worse at is selling. The sell decision is something that the industry ignores. That's the most important decision that you need in your investment policy. You want to talk to us during the week? The number is 800-317-9119. Send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Register for our week in review at that email address. I'm out of time. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. We'll be back next week in full force with Perry. Have a great weekend.